Okay, I think we're back up and running. Thank you. Okay, we're on Agency 2, Secretary of State. Mr. Secretary of State, welcome. And if you want to introduce your team, we'll get started and we'll go through this basically page by page, unit by unit. Some will go real quick, right? But members have questions and we'll go from there. So, okay, so welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, and committee members. It is indeed a pleasure to be with you this afternoon. And for the record and for the benefit of your listening audience, my name is Ed Murray, Wyoming Secretary of State. Now, my team, whom I'll introduce shortly, and I are indeed prepared to present our 2017-2018 biennium budget request to you. And this is my first budget session, and before getting into the nitty-gritty, I want to provide some important background and some data that forms the basis of our budget request and certainly highlights the beneficial ways our office serves the people of Wyoming and thus provides a very positive return on the taxpayer dollars, which we hope that you will entrust to us. The Office of Secretary of State, as you may know, is comprised of five divisions. And indeed, like a hand with five fingers, we reach out and touch in a very positive way, working at various times and in various ways with nearly every citizen of Wyoming. And I want to bring to your attention, if I may, Mr. Chairman and committee members, our first handout. Carolyn has advised me that it is the first page of 009, and it looks like this. It really was intended to be a one-pager, and it does show each of our five divisions, Business Division, Compliance Division, Election Division, Admin Services Division, and Technology Division, and it bullets some highlight information about that division and the scope of our touch. And as I analogize the hand with the five fingers, ours is very much a hand of service. Now, we could spend a lot of time visiting, and we're prepared to do so if you want. We're at your mercy and at your pleasure. And we could spend as much time as you want talking about each division. But what I really want to do is to feature one of our divisions today, the Business Division, because in looking back at where you left off 2 years ago during the budget meeting, when this very committee asked a number of questions about the modernization of the business office, and specifically how we could move forward with electronic filings. And that time it was reported to you, and I'm quoting, it being electronic filing would take a major effort and cost between $8 and $12 million, end quote. Now, before getting into how my team and I have addressed this monumental issue, some important background is important for you to consider. In taking office in January of 2015, it did not escape me the awesome responsibility and the enormous challenge of carrying forward and ensuring the long and proud tradition for which Secretary Maxfield and indeed all of my predecessors have been known, and that is namely exceptional service and maintaining the mantra of business friendly. So what does this mean, business friendly? And from the state's perspective, it has meant pursuing strategies that recognize the importance of Wyoming in free enterprise. It's the best system in the world for creating jobs, leading to economic prosperity and opportunity for our Wyoming citizens. And so business friendly leads to conditions whereby our youth can live and prosper in Wyoming, obtain property, buy a house, raise a family, and enjoy life. Now, the Office of Secretary of State is the business office for the state of Wyoming. And the office through which all entities, the moms and pops, the titans of industry, mining, and so forth, they form, they register, and report so that they can do business in good standing and sustain us and our families and our economy. Now, coming from the private business sector, I've experienced firsthand what this business-friendly means, and I can remember starting out 30 years ago and filing my first LLC with Kathy Carpen and having her assist me personally in checking for the availability of a business name. And then over the course of the last 30 years, filing literally hundreds of annual reports, even being late on some occasions. But you know what? It was never a gotcha. It was always a service, always a helpful hand, friendly, reaching out from the Office of Secretary of State. And I can assure you, this office will remain business friendly and helpful, and will remain so into the future as long as you can help us to do our jobs and to do them well. Now, upon taking office during my 100-day plan, I went through each division from top to bottom, met with each member of the staff one-on-one, and gathered incredible volumes of data. And this data was startling. For example, in the business division, at the beginning of the year, we were servicing 121,859 business entities. In the 11 months since, we've already increased by 6,341 entities to a total of 128,200. This is an increase of 5.2% this year. And at the beginning of the year, the business division was experiencing tremendous historic turnover, upwards of 50%. There was enormous stress and pressure upon the staff and the business division to meet that 5-day statutory requirement. And we have ever-increasing filings without the corresponding increase in staff. And as you may recall, I was informed that the last budget session my predecessor had asked for two additional registers and was given one. And we're thankful for that. The office has turned to temps, however, to cover the manpower needs to satisfy the statutory limits, and there have been delays and mistakes that have occurred because of this necessity to go to temps, and also the morale has been low. Now, so when I came on board, something had to be done, and something had to be done quickly. And after the first 100 days, I sat down with my new leadership, Karen Wheeler, Tom Cowan, Andrea Byrne, and Jerry Melnes in business. And I challenged them, we must take on this turnover problem. Plus, we need to go electronic. We had no other choice. And so we started to look at these challenges with new perspective and objective. We had to find a way. Now, within months, Deputy Wheeler, working with Tom Cowan and Kendra Herrera, who is also here, and the wonderful folks at HRD, and with the incredible counsel and input from Kevin Hibbard, and I see Joyce over there as well, and his team, we found a way to reclassify our entire business division staff to provide the clarification and the classification status to which they were entitled and commensurate with the like positions in other departments. And this was paid for internally. Likewise, in going to electronic filing, my team, and in particular Karen Wheeler and Andrea Byrne, became inspired to find a way and did find a way to go electronic. We were able to leverage our pre-existing relationship with our business platform vendor, who had already developed for another state, the state of Tennessee, the very modules that we needed to go forward with in our state. The will, those modules, had already been invented. And so simply by seeking, simply by asking, we are now in the process of deploying these new modules that will accommodate the electronic filing of several processes, including reinstatements and registrations. This is extremely exciting for us. And it is our hope that these electronic filings options will now enable our clients, our constituents, the businessmen and women of Wyoming, to do business on their terms, us working for them at the speed of their business. But also, it's hopeful that this new electronic filing will help relieve that enormous stress and pressure under which our business division works every single day. I want to jump quickly to what I believe will be referred to as page 2 of the handout, but it looks like this. And Carolyn made brought to my attention that our handout 1 with the salient facts and then this handout are part of a package. And so this handout, I want to jump right to page 8 because it shows our online deployment of online filing capabilities. Now, the page looks like this. And at any rate, I'm so ecstatic to share with you that we've already rolled out the domestic reinstatements last week, and we've already had over 49 electronic filings to date, according to Andrea, as of 7:30 this morning. 49 filings that otherwise would have been done by paper. And so I encourage you to review this package at your convenience and in detail because it's a compelling story full of data and information as to the conversion of our paper processes to electronic. And it's a program that we're very, very excited about. Now, the whole process to restructure and stabilize our business division, and then to begin this process to make our business division state of the art, has happened in the last 11 months. And so I am indeed fortunate to have my team working hard, very, very hard, to find ways to save our great state money. And to maximize, and in this case, I might add, the $8 to $12 million, and to maximize the return on the money with which we are entrusted. And we are hopeful and trust that you will also appreciate the efforts we're making, not only in the business division, but in each of our 5 divisions. And so I want to briefly mention 2 other initiatives, one in the compliance and one in elections, which are certainly germane to today's budget request, especially in regards to one of the position requests that we are seeking. In compliance, again, if you refer to our one-pager, we have 92,000 stockbrokers registered, et cetera, et cetera. This legislative session, you'll see a complete rewrite of our Securities Act. It's over 50 years old. The exciting part about this rewrite includes provisions for crowdfunding. And this is an alternative source of financing that has proven very effective in other states around the nation. Financing for our youth who find it nearly impossible to obtain business startup financing through the traditional banking methods, as I was certainly able to enjoy over 30 years ago. And so we want to be able, through this program, crowdfunding, to help support our youth. And additionally, through compliance, we'll be increasing audits and investor awareness through this new position for which we're coming to you today. And finally, in elections, I'm very, very excited about the direction our division is going with fresh perspective and a new partnership with the county clerks to ensure and facilitate the election process. Now, the e-poll books and vote centers legislation, which you approved last session, was recently debuted in Cheyenne for the yes-no vote for city administrator. And this was an incredible smash success. Additionally, we're looking at ways to increase the voter participation among a very large, disengaged youth population. In the last general election, I'm sorry to report that only 8.8% of eligible voters between 18 and 24 voted. And so this means that 91.2% of our state's youth, our future, are not engaged in determining the future of our state. And so in the near future, I'll be reaching out to you, our leaders in education and in the legislature, and perhaps you educators I see here in the legislature, And we'll also be reaching out to our young people to take on this issue in Wyoming in the elections division. And the lack of voter participation among our youth is simply a problem we can no longer ignore, and it is essential we begin to address it. I'd now like to introduce Karen Wheeler, Deputy Secretary of State, Tom Cowan, Director of Administrative Support, Andrea Byrne, Director of our Technology Division, and last but certainly not least, Kendra Herrera, our Senior Accounting Analyst, to walk you through the budget, and then together we can respond to any questions you may have. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Secretary. Okay, we'll just start. We'll start on your first unit. And let's get to the right page. I have administration, right? Unit 101, I should say. Okay, where are you at? Where do you want to start at?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We can start on either page 12 or 24. I'm not sure how much detail you want to get into.
12 is just the overview. Is that mm-hmm. No, 12 is the administration unit, right?
Yes, and page 24 goes into more detail.
Okay, let me scroll through. Let's go to, well, there's an exception request on page 20. Is that right? We want to make sure we hit every exception request, and then basically the, you know, any narrative or anything you need to add to that. So, members, and if I'm skipping over that, you can correct me, but I think the first, let's just quickly look at the summary. Page 12, 29 employees. Exception request for one employee, additional employee, to move to 30. And then, so I want to talk about these and what the governor's actions. Okay, and I think those first actions are on Senator Burns.
Can I ask just a quick question? Where's the, you've got just some federal funds coming in, $189,000. What is that? Is that part of the HAVA?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, it is part of the HAVA. It's our federal HAVA position.
Thank you. Is that money that's going to continue flowing? Is it going to go up or is it going to peter out?
Mr. Chairman, to you, Senator Burns, that's definitely going to peter out.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think then the first exception request in unit or in unit 0101, right, I think, is on page 20.
Right.
Is that right, members?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, our first exception request is on page 20. This request pertains to the publication of the investment of state funds constitutional amendment that was passed during the 2015 legislative session. Our office is statutorily required to publish constitutional amendments that are passed during the legislative session. And because no one knows how many may or may not pass, we certainly cannot budget for this. So we have worked with Kevin Hibbard and Don Richards as to how best to address the funding for this. And this was the consensus that we came to, is to ask for an exception request.
Okay. Any questions, members? Go ahead, Representative Stubbs.
Mr. Chairman, Karen, how many, is it estimated how many, if we had additional constitutional amendments proposed and adopted this time around, would we need additional funds then, or is this enough to cover multiple amendments?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, this will cover this amendment only. When a constitutional amendment is proposed, we work with LSO to determine how much it will cost if it is passed. If it is passed, we will come to you during the session and request the funding.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Burns.
Would it make sense to put in, this is slightly off topic, but not really, to make sense to put in session laws that any constitutional amendment that does pass the legislature should include an appropriation for publishing it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, if it's up to us, it would enormously facilitate that constitutional process that that is provided for, and it's necessary. We need that funding in order to publish and do our constitutional and statutory job. And so, yes, that would be enormously helpful.
We've always done it this way. And there's Don. You want to elaborate on the reason? I mean,
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Gruber did look at this, and there were a couple of constitutional amendments about a decade ago, maybe 8 years ago, that did include an appropriation. They did not proceed, which was actually a positive in Mr. Gruber's mind. He indicates that if you include an appropriation along with a substantive change to the Constitution, it causes a conflict within that. That the resolution can only include one or the other, but not both. And I can have him write up something for the committee as to why that process is. We do include what the anticipated cost is in the fiscal note, and to the extent one or more of these is adopted, we have worked with the office, and LSO will bring it to the attention of the floors or the Joint Conference Committee. That this constitutional amendment is proceeding, and the cost is essentially based on the number of lines of print, I believe.
Any questions, members? Okay, and Governor, since it is one time, LSRA and not the general fund. Okay, next is, I'm on page 21. Is that the next?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, our next exception request is found on page 21. And this request pertains to the publication of the Peggy A. Kelly Wyoming Cannabis Act of 2016. In short, it is the Medical Marijuana Initiative. Should the initiative gather the required number of valid signatures by February 8, 2016, it would qualify for placement on the 2016 ballot. And again, we are statutorily required to publish this in the same manner as constitutional amendments.
Okay, and denied by the governor. Any questions? Okay. Okay. Next is page 22, is that right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Our next exception request is found on page 22. This request is for a full-time AWAC position only. This AWAC position is for a public information and communication liaison. Mr. Chairman and members, the way society, our constituents, communicate today has changed. 5 years ago, we used flip phones. Today, we use smartphones to get our news, to communicate with people or businesses. We have watched this office change, particularly myself. I've been there for 30 years, and I have watched it change and evolve over time. And unfortunately, this is an area that we have not kept up with. We have no choice but to utilize the methods and technology that the world is using. We need to effectively engage our constituency and reach them the best that we can with the new methods of communication. This is especially important as radio, television, and newspapers lose their audience and a new generation of voters, young entrepreneurs, businessmen, and women communicate in non-traditional ways. The bottom line, our office is still using the flip phone. We have not caught up. So in August, we brought on an individual on a contract basis to start addressing this need. In just a few short months, I realized that this position is vital to our mission and needs to be a permanent part of this office, and therefore we are requesting an AWAC position.
Go ahead, Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Chairman, with regards to this AWAC, was this the one that where you use 900 series?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, we did a sole source contract in our 900 series.
And then I think subsequently that I think the governor approved the B11, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, in October, the governor's office did a B11 for an AWAC position.
Okay.
That does not go into effect until mid-December.
What, so you want to take the 900 series dollars and transfer them to 100 series and make this a permanent position? Is that what's happening?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
So there's no new money. How come? Well, I guess, and we're really trying to get the handle on really the authorization on these 900 series. So I'm looking at the 900 series now. And so where are the payments? What's it under that you've made for this individual? Where is that at? Is that the $17,000 under unit 10101?
Mr. Chairman, at the time, are you looking at the 600, 900 series?
I am, yeah.
At the time of that request, it's up to September of 30, and so we'd only made one payment to this individual, and so it did not meet the threshold of the $5,000.
I see. So it's not on here, so. So you have excess 900 series funds and $134,000. Where, I mean, I'm just wondering the authorization to do that. And then, I mean, couldn't we, I guess, I don't know, explain to me, where is the authorization to do that, to hire a person with that? For
Mr. Chairman, we did a sole source contract in our 900 series. We have asked for the AWAC position, and then we are asking permission to move $134,994 from our 900 series to our 100 series. No money has moved out of our 900 series at all.
Well, I'm just, I mean, usually we, you know, the 900 series, it's authorized and it's for specific contracts, but I don't know, you know, it's not like a block grant. I mean, it's supposed to be used for specific things. So if there's an extra $134,000 in 900 series, shouldn't that revert, or couldn't it be used to help pay for these constitutions, you know, that are being asked for, those kind of things? I mean, and then you just come to us with a straight up request, hey, we need this person, and make the case for it and say, boom, we need this money, and you know what I mean? And so if we've overfunded the 900 series, you know, that's a different issue. But you see our take on it? I mean, looking at it from our view, it's different. But
well, Mr. Chairman, we looked at our 900 series with the fresh new set of eyes and looked at areas that we could I guess change up a little bit. So for instance, we had a contract with a hearing officer for administrative hearings. Whenever one of our commercial registered agents that we took an administrative action for would take us to hearing, we had a hearing officer contract. And we chose to let that contract expire, and we will now use the Office of Administrative Hearings. So we were trying to identify ways that we could use existing funding without asking for new.
Okay. Any questions, members?
So Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Representative Greer.
Yeah, that was a question. I mean, what changed that freed up the 900 series? And it had to do with you eliminated a contract for an administrative hearing officer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me, I don't have any.
We had a little feedback. I think Representative Nicholas was next, and then we'll go to the senators right down.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to know how much that contract was with the hearing examiner, and where, what other funds or other sources you found to total out the $134,000.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, if you give me 1 minute, I'll look at the total amount of that contract. Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, it was $60,000.
Is that an annual amount or a biennial?
Biennial, Mr. Chairman.
So then there's another, going on to his mm-hmm. question, the second part of his question, where were the other parts that you found the 900 series?
Mr. Chairman, we reviewed our 902 in our 100 series, which is our consulting, and that was the area that we found where we could use some of the money, hopefully, with your permission, to cover the remainder.
65,000. Okay.
Okay, to the senators, Mr. Co-Chair first, Senator Perkins, and then Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Representative Nicholas covered it. I was just trying to figure out if it was a dollar-for-dollar swap here.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's fine. Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, was there an overabundance of hearing administrators? And if there was, is there still?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, an overabundance of hearing administrators?
Well, my understanding is you got rid of a hearing administrator
Mr. Chairman,
in order to enter in this contract. So were there, I'm trying to figure out what led to letting go of a hearing administrator. And if that's the case, do we still have too many?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, we did an outside contract with a hearing administrator, and we haven't gone to a hearing in several years. So we decided to let go of that particular contract and use the resources at the Office of Administrative Hearings. The hearing officer that we had contracted with was not with that office.
Mr. Chairman, one more follow-up. Did I hear you say that this was B-11'd by the governor?
The position, Mr. Chairman, Senator, the position was, yes.
So it was pretty much the same funds, but then the governor authorized the position or authorized the contract?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes.
Thank you.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wait till I have my hearing aids in, then. So, going back to the 900 series, I'm trying to understand. So, as we look at the 900 series, and I mean, they were for specific things. So, let's look at unit 101 on the 900 series, and you've got Arakan. Is that how you say it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Arakan, and may I ask, Senator, what page you're on?
I'm looking at the 900 series report that you provided to
us. Thank you. So, Mr. Chairman, Senator, you are on page one of that report?
Yeah, at least the one I have only has one page, at least the one I pulled up on.
Yes. So, Arakan hosts our YCPIS and WIO Ridge systems.
Right, and so as we, and Mr. Chairman, as we look down, I mean, each one of those in Tecuity, what do they do for their 207,000?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, Tecuity does all of our programs for our business division, our receiving system.
Okay. And then, and I guess what I was wondering was, in the end, as I look at the 1.6 million, that's basically what we've got in the standard budget for your 900 series, I think. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes.
So going back, I'm just curious. So I'm going back, and this kind of goes back to what we were talking about a minute ago. So when there was, I'm trying to understand how the $134,994 that was the 902 consulting services that you're swapping for the AWAC position. I'm trying to figure out where or why that excess was in the 900 position to begin with. I mean, what was not? I guess is the only difference was the Office of Administrative or the Independent Hearing Examiner contract, was that the sole source for that money?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'm going to go to my bench to the person who knows these numbers inside and out.
Okay.
The original appropriation for that money came in 2005. That money has rolled into our budget due to the object code that it's sitting in, and we have utilized that money over the better part of a decade for various services for our office, temporary services, contracts for IT consulting that needed to be done. So we've never necessarily had it pinned down to a specific authority that it needed to be spent.
Okay.
So this year, brand new set of eyes on the budget, we're bringing it to you. On page 17, it actually outlines what we will be asking for in the 900 series.
And Mr. Chairman, as to Kendra's point, to Senator Perkins' question, you know, these are, that question is exactly the question that I asked. And so, as has been alluded to, we are just laying the cards out on the table, full transparency, wanting to do what is proper and in accordance with good faith. And so we are, as has been stated, we're looking at this in a new way, with input from Mr. Hibbert. You know, it's just called laying the cards out on the table. And I received the same answer that you just did when asking the same question. That is, they came upwards of a decade ago, and they were just rolled forward as part of the standard budget year after year after year. And there you have it.
Mr. Chairman?
Kevin, go ahead.
I would like to point out that no 900 series money was moved into B-11. Okay, the position, the AWAC position, was provided to them, and they have to use their overtime money, their 100 series money, or vacancy savings. But no 900 series money was moved through the B-11, which
well, that was my question. I was wondering what the authorization was to do this. I'm looking at all these sad story authorizations.
Right, so,
I don't see any of it for this.
Right, so that's...
So this is 100 series money that's being used for this temporary employee.
Absolutely. We cleared this way to make sure that 900 series money was not moved. That would be a violation of the rules. And A&I, myself, has to make sure that happens. So the governor gave them the position through March, but they have to use their 100 series money, which they have some overtime and then vacancy savings. At March, that position goes away that the governor authorized them. And then what they've done is they've asked correctly this body to say, we would like to use the 900 series money for a position. They could have asked for a position without that and given up the 900 series money. But they also did give up $50,000. There was a question earlier about, well, this contract was $60,000. You're doing the math. They gave up the $50,000. That's on page 23. So later on, you'll see that they've done that correctly as well. So what they've asked for now is a position. They've asked for the authority to actually move the money from 900, which they didn't have, which nobody has, in the following biennium. If they don't get it, that AWAC position dies, and we move along. Hopefully that helps.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Wasserberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to ask the question of having taught American government for 16 years, this particular age group has always had and struggled to vote. And so we're talking about using social media, which my office is in charge of, and we're very excited to say that 12,000 parents hit our site on a post we had about 3 weeks ago, so we thought we were pretty cool. But parents have to go to the site. And I guess what my question is how do you believe, or do you have research that shows, or do you have another state that has done this that actually shows that social media will increase voting by young people?
Senator Wasserberger. First of all, this 11 months has been an incredible learning experience, and one of the greatest benefits that I have had to learn is by going and attending the National Association of Secretary of States. It's resulted in relationships building with the Secretary of State from Tennessee, for example, which has been very beneficial to our state. When I go to these conferences, entire sessions are set aside for the public information media communications aspect of the Office of Secretary of State. And so I dare say that 49 states have this type of office for which, or this type of position, not only in terms of the position, but numbers, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 people. Now, with respect to a correlation between the youth and voter turnout, we're starting to gather some remarkable data. We've met with University of Wyoming, the data resources fellows over there, Mr. Bieber, and we're asking these same questions. And what we do know so far is that there is evidence, there's reports or studies that show that for that demographic, 18 to 24, if they do not engage during that demographic, there is a pattern where they will not thereafter. And so then how do you engage them? And it's a multiple phased problem. It's a huge discussion that we are at just the beginning of trying to understand and assess and ascertain. We have an enormous amount of homework to do, but I believe the evidence will show in the future that there is a direct correlation between the usage of this technology, the actual platforms that they use, and voter turnout. There's no doubt in my mind that that will come to pass as factual, as data. I believe that now. Would I be prepared to represent to you that I have something upon which to hang my hat on that? The answer is not at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, and I recognize your passion here, but I'm struggling to understand. I mean, I know you have kids that similar age as my kids. I mean, they get on Instagram or they do Facebook. I'm having a hard time even understanding why you would do YouTube. Most of the time when you see YouTube, you see crazy stuff or whatever else, but I'm, somebody sends that to you. But I'm just I'm really struggling with $113,000 for somebody that, I mean, our kids do it all the time.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Co-Chairman Ross, so we have these young children who do what they do. First of all, let me back up, because I don't want there to be any misunderstanding about the focus of this position being entirely limited to utilization by our elections division for a mission, if you will, to try and include our youth in the voting process. It's a fraction. It's a fraction. And I would just want to turn this. This is not about this is not so much about me or my initiative. I just want to turn it over to some of the over 90 years of experience I have sitting with me in Deputy Wheeler, in Director Cowan, and have them share with you what they have shared with me in the necessity of going forward. In our business division, in our compliance division, in our elections division. And so, Tom, I would invite you and just have at it.
Mr. Chairman, I've been with the state in the Secretary's office. We look closely with Notary Public, with the compliance. I don't know how many times I would visit with somebody who had lost their money in an investment swindle for the lack of a dime to call our office to check something out before they sent their check. I think that our modern
means of communication such as Instagram, such as YouTube, could be used very effectively to reach a lot more people than we do right now. I've spent, I don't know, when I was doing it, probably 10 years. I know Director Wheeler here has done the same thing in our business division or in our compliance division, going out and trying to do investment awareness. We reached maybe hundreds of people and spent a lot of money trying to do it. I think this is a much, much more effective, most more cost-effective way of trying to reach more people. I work with the folks in notaries. We get calls constantly. Where can I get a notary? Why couldn't that be driven through the cell phone? I'm not a technology user. I'm a gray hair. I got a cell phone. My wife bought me one. Now, first thing I'm going to do is I'm just going to go out and I'm going to Google notary in Wyoming. How do I get one? And if we can put a site on there, that's what's going to drive information to the people that want it. And that's what we are looking to try to do with that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kocher, I can just speak to you from my experience as the director in the compliance division overseeing the investing area. Sadly, my forte became fraud. I traveled from one end of this state to the other putting on investor awareness presentations, and we couldn't get people to come out. So then we partnered with the AARP, and we could get the seniors to come out for a free lunch, and we would hit about 300 per pop. But we were hitting just a certain demographic. We needed to hit larger areas. And I will tell you, when it comes to age, fraud knows no demographic. We have young professionals, we have attorneys, we have doctors, and we have your seniors who are victims of fraud who did not know that we existed and what our office offers. So if we could have just reached one person through this new means of communication and saved them their retirement, their life savings, it would have been wonderful. Also, we're working with the Elections Division on these new initiatives. We're really excited about one they've come up with. The new type of talk these days is hashtag. So we're looking at hashtag #WhyVote. That's WYVote. And we're looking at promoting voting among different demographics through that as well. So there's a lot of areas that this person can reach out and touch our constituents that we weren't touching before.
What, just a couple. Sorry. First of all, I'm going back to the contract for the administrative examiner that you folks had. Was that a $30,000 a year contract that was existed on an annual basis, regardless of whether they had hearings or not, or was it based upon an hourly basis, or how was it created?
I'd have to look, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I'd have to look at the contract to determine exactly how it split out. It was a $60,000 lump sum for the biennium, and it was just as needed. Luckily, we did not need to call on that individual this biennium.
So what I would like to see is a breakdown of what was used over the past 6 or 7 years, and if it's just as needs basis, then those funds have been wrapping in or they have been rolling back. What have been happening with those funds? So if you could just provide us with that so I understand that funding mechanism. And then going to the on the consulting funds, I'm not sure I understand. You said you found something that from 2005 that was rolling over on the standard budget. So could you just identify what that was and how much that was per year and what it was for in 2005?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, yes, we can certainly do that. It was given to us in 2005 to rewrite our corporations program. And then, like I said, because it sat in the 0902, that's not one-time funding, and it rolled into our budget every biennium after that. The initial amount of funding. Yeah, it was it's actually $498,000 initially in 2005. It's dwindled down, and it's dwindled down for a number of reasons. Mainly, I think in the past, you could utilize your 900 series for any salary inequities that you had, and we did have a couple of situations, I believe, where that money went from the 900 to the 100 without any of our doing. But over the years, we've used that pot of money for temporary services in our business division to meet our statutory 5-day turnaround. We've had elections ESNS on site during the general election in case anything went wrong. So we've utilized that money in a variety of ways, and it's really become vital to our office.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, and just to veer a little bit, but I needed to ask it before I forgot. Looking at the 2016 budget and the cuts to get us sort of over the hump for the current biennium, it looks like the Secretary of State's office contributed just over $210,000 to the cuts that the governor put together to balance the budget. And I was just wondering if you could tell us what that $210,000 was.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stepson, that is our 100 series excess, and that's basically due to our high turnover in our business division. We had excess of slush. Yes, vacancy savings, sir.
And are those on those vacancies? Are those filled now, or in the process of being filled now?
We are pleased to tell you that they are all filled.
Okay.
Go ahead, Senator Wasserberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want you to know I just posted you on Facebook.
Somebody's angling for a job.
But I have a question. The question is, on your 900 series, you have a Tecuity Incorporated Wyoming Suite rules for, looks like, if I'm on the right line, $227,000?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, correct.
What is that?
So Tecuity is the vendor that we contract with to do all of our business division programs, our receiving programs, and they will be developing the program for the rules project as well.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator.
Could you bring me up to speed on the rules project?
Mr. Chairman,
when is
Senator,
that going to end? Yeah, that's time limited.
Yes, I'm thrilled to do that. And once again, I'm going to go to my bench, and I'm going to have Director Byrne update you because she's intricately involved in the rules project.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I'd be happy to update you on the rules project. As per the legislation, we were required to provide you with an update in October of 2015, which we did provide to LSO. Thank you, Don. And within that update, you would find that we have spent a lot of time writing requirements and rewriting requirements. The project originally started down one path, and then in December of 2014, we had to shift gears and head down a second path. The first path was dividing our project into two separate pieces, two separate phases is what we referenced it as. One was the public website, and the other was the workflow management system. In December, we decided that we needed to pursue that as one project, and we rewrote the requirements to accommodate that. As of today, we have expended $71,000 of the $700,000 that we have contracted with Tecuity to develop the project, and we are in the process of dealing with a lot of back-end technical details. I don't want to bore you with them, but we are fine-tuning the data model. We are working on data conversion and different processes to handle data conversion. We're working with different types of rules, different file types. We have some rules that are in PDFs. We have others that are in WordPerfect and still others that are in Word. So we're having to deal with being able to convert all of that. We're completing the site maps for the three different components of the system. There's a public piece, there's an administrative piece, and there's a state agency piece. We are building the website, all three components, to be a responsive web design, which means it'll be accessible from mobile devices, whether it's an iPad, Surface Pro, iPhone, whatever. So that is one of the other back-end things that we're doing is designing the template that's going to work for all three of those different portals. And then we're working on a lot of back-end business processes and data objects, processes such as how do you enter a rule, how does it get saved, how does an agency update their rules liaison, how does an agency update their programs, et cetera. The program or the project is on track for deployment by August of 2016.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Byrne.
Just so I'm clear, now it's starting to the cobwebs start to fall away. This is a thing to on your website. You can actually look up the rules of any agency in the state government.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
In just about any format.
Well, the public website will provide the functionality for an individual to do a word search against all state agency rules. So if somebody were looking for water rules but they weren't sure which agency they belong to, they could simply enter the word water, and our system will return a list of all rules and the associated state agencies that have the word water within their rules, within
okay.
the text of their rules.
Thank you.
That's one component of
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Yes. You're welcome.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. Just then, and that will that be searchable by both keyword and other mechanisms when you have the new project up and running?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it will.
Okay. One other question. Go ahead, Mr. Co-Chair.
Not on that. I have just one other question.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And thank you for your hard work on that. It's been a good project. The $210,000 that was an agency reduction, apparently that's a one-time kind of thing because you've now hired these people. Is that correct? And so it doesn't hit your standard budget. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ross, that is correct. They'd ask of our 15-16 budget what we could save.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, any other questions? Okay. I think we're moving on then to... We finished 0101, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, we did have that last exception request number 4, and that is we're turning
the money.
Right.
Yeah.
That's on page 23. All of our duties are statutorily required. We don't have any programs to cut. So in the spirit of the governor's request, we looked at what we could give back, and we did identify a reduction of $50,000.
Okay. Very good.
Representative
Greer.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just curious, page 17 then, we've got, is that what is outlined for the Series 900 monies that where those will be identified to go for this budget?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm glad that you pointed that out. That's exactly what we've done here because we realize that the money that was appropriated to us in 2005 had a purpose. And that we want all of our 900 series money going forward to have a purpose. And so if you look on page 17 at the bottom, the very first light item there, that's what Andrea was speaking of with our Erican contract. Our Wild Ridge program is that money there. The 901, the $150,000, that's for the codification of the rules with LexisNexis. That is kind of an estimate at this point in time as it is an unknown. We're working with LexisNexis to determine what they're going to charge us every month to be able to assist us with our rules codification. And then also we have $50,000 outlined for our temporary personnel services because we do continuously bump up against that 5-day statutory deadline, and we have to bring in temporary services to assist us with that.
And Mr. Go Chairman, ahead. Then the number 4 on that list is almost $50,000 for communications, which is under item 204.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, you're correct. We are asking to move some of that 900 out of that $498,000 that Representative Nicholas asked about earlier up into our 200 series under communications. In the past, this is my first budget session going through this as well. It is for the deputy and secretary. We weren't budgeted properly as far as our actual expenses up against what our budgeted categories were, and so we were looking at our communications, and we utilized that for basically our mailings to reach out to all of our constituents, and it was under budgeted, so we wanted to just make that whole.
And then, Mr. Chairman, this too is my first budget, so okay. But with that, on the communications 204 going across, I just kind of need to understand. We have a base budget of $84,000, standard budget then of $209,000, and then an additional 50 I need to understand those concepts. And maybe I should have paid attention.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Representative, so you're asking?
Well, I get, Mr. Chairman, and I guess I don't understand the difference between the base budget 17-18, standard budget 17-18. There's a large increase there. So that's one question. Then the second, 24?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think that if you look at the Chapter 17, that will be very telling to you as where we were not budgeting properly within our object code.
So that's just, Mr. Chairman, that's just a readjustment to get the expenses where they need to be.
Exactly.
So then my last question, I'll be quiet, is the 49,945 included in this 209,945?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, it is.
Oh, okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rules tracking, there's no exception requests, is that right?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns?
Yeah, one question I wanted
sure.
to ask. You were talking about that you had to hire temps to meet the statutory five-day limit. Are there certain times of the year when this happens? What's the event that causes this backup?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I would like to say there's one specific event, but there's not. First of all, it was turnover. We had to hire temps to help backfill because of the turnover. We also are seeing a huge influx of filings coming in from Nevada because Nevada has raised their fees dramatically. So we do have to hire temps to help backfill in that area. We also hire temps in our elections division whenever we get petitions that come in and we have to check signatures, run a time frame to which we have to have those signatures verified as well.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, Nevada raised its registration fee to $650, and we have seen enormous transfer of businesses previously in Nevada coming to Wyoming.
Go ahead.
Is that the account? I noticed that in your estimated revenues or fees that are paid to your office are increased by about, I think it was about $2 or $3 million. This biennium over the 17-18 biennium over the current biennium, is that your estimate of the effect of that influx?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Mr. Chair, excuse me. Senator, I don't – when we first prepared this, I don't think we were – maybe so. Let Kendra answer that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the numbers are estimates because we were in the middle of the year, so – we're hoping to project even more than that, potentially with the onset of Nevada and their raised fees.
Mr. Chairman, what's our fee?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, our initial filing fee is $100. Nevada also, in addition to raising their registration fee, has also imposed about a $300 or $400 business licensing fee on businesses as well.
So, Mr. Chairman, are you going to email all of the registered folks in Nevada so they can get a hold of you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, no.
There you go. Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Secretary of State Marie, these people from Nevada, was their last name Rossiglione? Rossiglione.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. Lowlanders. Okay, now we're back on the budget. All right, any other? Okay, next unit.
Mr. Chairman, our next unit is 0401, the Securities Enforcement Fund, and there are no exception requests to this one.
Okay, any questions, members? Just 900 series or any? Okay. All right. Next unit.
Mr. Chairman, our last one is the 0601. This is the Bucking Horse and Rider. This is spending authority only. This is flow-through money, and we do not have any exception requests.
Okay. All right. Any questions? Senator Burns.
Quite a while ago, we authorized $20,000 to protect the trademark. Is that money just sitting somewhere waiting for somebody to start printing out Bucking Bronco T-shirts or something?
Chairman, Senator, the $20,000 is for us to license the trademark essentially, and also to protect it. So we're currently working with the University of Wyoming to do some really cool marketing, essentially, of the protection of the Bucking Horse and Rider.
And then when you do license it out, where does that money go? When you license it out, somebody's paying you either a flat fee to use it or a royalty on their sales. Where is that money going?
That money is with the University of Wyoming. We have a memorandum of understanding in place with them as they utilize the Bucking Horse and Rider more than we do, and we can provide you a copy of that.
Well, they use it more, but the question I have is for those who pay to license it to print it on hats and so forth. I've got a King Ropes cap that has it, and King Ropes paid the university for it. Does that go into an enterprise fund, or does that go into the university's fund, or does that revert?
So it goes into the university's fund.
Thank you.
How much is that? I mean, what are the licensing fees?
Mr. Chairman, you'll be interested to know it's in looking at those numbers, we're upwards of over $500,000 in licensing revenue that I, of course, wondered where's that going? And it's not coming to the Office of Secretary of State, I can tell you that. Yeah.
Okay, Don, did you have something to?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, just to clarify my comment earlier regarding the appropriation on a resolution, the legal staff got back to me, and all appropriations must be conducted in a bill pursuant to Article 3, Section 34 of the Constitution, and resolutions are in Article 3, Section 41. There is a question as to whether a bill is a resolution, and that's the conflict there.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, anything else?
Mr. Chairman, that's all we have.
Okay. Members, okay. Well, we thank you for your presentation today. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, and each and every committee member, thank you very, very much for your time and thoughtful questions.
Okay. Okay, we'll just take a stretch at our desk, because if we take a break, it's a minimum. We're going to take the stretch, and we're going to reshuffle. And we've got Madam Auditor on deck. Okay. Madam Auditor, welcome to the Joint Appropriations Committee.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate all of you staying and seeing us this afternoon. We've been really, really looking forward to coming to JAC all year, actually.
Now, come on, come on. Now, yes. Flattery will get you most places, but not here.
But seriously, we are excited to be here. We've been working long and hard on a new payroll system for the state that affects 9,900 employees. We've been working in streamlining processes, and I've met with several of you that have had the opportunity to come and meet one-on-one with you to explain why we have this budget exception request. And I do understand the declining revenues that we are in, but we've been working on this project for a long time, and I felt that it was my duty and my responsibility to come forward and continue with this project and say, you know, that we can do things better. We can leverage technology. We're doing, we have a lot of manual processes. And in meeting with members of the legislature, one thing that was clear is I needed to communicate the cost savings to this committee so that you can clearly understand the cost of the manual transactions and how I believe the efficiencies will really take hold. So that's my exception budget request. I noticed that you were going line by line by the budget, so I don't know how you would like to handle it, Mr. Chairman.
You know, we'll just flip quickly page by page. It won't take long, and then we'll talk in depth about your rather large request.
Right. Okay.
And go from there. It won't take long. It's okay. A pretty short budget, pretty straightforward.
It's very straightforward. So on page 3, of my budget, you can see we have some monies that are parked there by the legislature so that we can account for it. Brucellosis has been taken out. There is no money parked for that money this biennium projected. The general fund license revenue recoupment, that stays the same. That money is there for when the governor gives licenses to individuals
or the legislature.
Yes.
Generally we do.
Yeah, okay. Yes. And then the state employee compensation, that was also reduced $850,000 for that for a total of $3,700,000. Our office just placeholders that for but we don't, that's not part of my administration or my budget.
Right. Okay.
And so, the administration for $17,609,040, that's the biennial cost for the operations of our office, for our software, and for the administration, and all the duties that we have for the state.
Go ahead, Mr. Co-Chair.
Madam Auditor, you have turned back, it appears, identified as a reductions, $650,000. Is that correct? Am I reading this right?
Go ahead.
What are you reading? This is from a document that identified budget deficit reductions prepared, I believe, by Alex. Right. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that is correct. That is a reduction in our budget for the current biennium. That is actually in regards to the money that we provide to retirees. And we understand with visiting with Kevin, and Kevin can probably give us a little more information on this, but our understanding is that participation is declined over the years. And so with working with group insurance and the budget office, they identified that there was $650 to be reduced out of our current biennium to help with the offset.
Okay. So
that is correct.
Thank you.
Okay. So as we move through your budget and you have your exception request, mm-hmm. and then we'll want to...
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead. It's late. But what Chairman Ross was saying, for the reduction this year, that's just a one-time reduction. It's not going to carry over, be biennialized in future years. Is that what I understand?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Kevin.
This will actually go to zero, that $3.7 million. What took place in 2008 is those individuals that were in the plan, we had to come up with the money to pay for their retirees' insurance because you can't go back in time and collect federal dollars. So the original appropriation was probably something in the tune of maybe $6 or $7 million. And every biennium, that payment for those retirees that are in 2008 and before, as they pass on, we no longer have to pay for that. So eventually that $3.7 million will go to zero. Mm-hmm. And it looks like about $650,000 a year, something in that neighborhood is what we're experiencing for that. But naturally, it's all going to be dependent on age and that kind of thing.
So Mr. Chair, I mean, if that trend follows, and there'll be another $600,000 in savings next.
That's true. But yeah. Now what we do in the standard budget is there's 0.06% on everybody's allocation for the retirees' insurance. That's how we'll pay for it in the future. But we couldn't do anything with those people prior to 2008.
Okay. Okay, what page are we on here? Where are you at, Madam Auditor?
I was on page 3.
Okay.
And so if you'd like to get into the details of our administration, we can do that.
We'll want to move through and look at your exception request, but then I think also just kind of any 900 series and 600 series.
Right. Would you like to start with the 900 series first?
Yeah, I think that'd be fine on your administration.
Okay, so we're requesting a 900 series $10,088,259,000, and what that is comprised of is our vendor software contract for the financial system and payroll system of $9,986,159. We have a total of $66,630 for our W-2 1099 production that we do annually for employees and vendors for federal compliance. And we also have budgeted this year you're going to get a new what they call a 1095-C. Because of the Affordable Care Act, every employee will receive something that looks similar to a 1099, detailing out by month the type, the cost of health insurance and your dependents and all of that information. And we have to produce another form, pay for production of that, pay for postage of that as well. And so we're budgeting $35,470 for our ACA compliance. For that. We are a beta site, which we're very excited about, so we're on track to be ready to produce that report, and we've been working really hard to be prepared for that upcoming event. So that's what my 900 series is comprised of, what we're budgeting for.
So are these are going to be time limited. They're going to be finished up.
It's an ongoing ongoing expenses for the compliance for our office. Our contract is up with our current vendor for the $9 million contract on September 30th, 2016, and that's why we've been so diligent in working hard to. And while I'm continuing to go forward with the payroll system part of our contract, because I think we can do things better. And we've had the same vendor since 1989, and yes, we have upgraded technology. We haven't seen what's out there in the market, and we've done our market demonstrations and we've looked in to see what the trends are. Actually, in my booklet, I have some trends and best practices for HR in there. And, so that's, the detail of where we're at in our office with our contract for the 900 series. The bids will be in, this Friday, which we're very excited about. And so when you come into session in January or February, I guess this this time, we'll have hard numbers. We'll know what it is the bids came in at. So we'll know, can we do things cheaper? Is it going to be more expensive? Should we stay with the same vendor? We'll have answers to all of those questions and for that. So that's what our goal is.
Okay. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stubson.
Just one. In the counts of employees, I just was the base budget you had listed 25 employees, but as a standard budget you had 26. And then in your narrative I saw a reference to 25 employees. So I wasn't sure.
I'm the 26.
Ah.
She's the 20. Yeah. She's 26.
Okay. Gotcha.
So is that all you had questions on my 900 budget series?
I think so. And so okay. I guess we're going to find out when the contract or when your bids open.
Right, this Friday. The bids were opened on what date was it that the bids were opened?
The bids.
Oh, we haven't opened the contract. Yeah. But go ahead.
The bid will be.
Right. The bid is coming in for the HR system. That is not the financial side. So okay. The financial system is still going to need to be renegotiated in a contract, which will need to be absorbed in our standard budget, which is the $9.9 million in the biennium area. So the bid that we have put out is for the new human resource information system, and that is going to be due on Friday.
But that's been denied, is it? Right? I mean...
The governor did not recommend it for funding based upon the fact that the funding is just not available. Like I said, I understand the predicament that you face this session, but I felt that it was my duty to go forward and, again, have the discussion. If it's not this session, maybe we have the discussion, you know, it's funded in the next session.
Why, I mean, there's kind of this overlap between you and A&I and HR on this, and how it's going to work, and I mean, I, you know, what's A&I think about this, and what is, you know, the OCI, you know, what, where are we at on that? I mean, okay. I just see, are you kind of, is this an A&I issue, or is
it actually joint? It's a joint issue. We deal with a lot of payroll information. They deal with part of it, such as the benefit enrollment sections, with the position sections, with succession planning for the positions, and the way the industry is going. These are all in the same types of business processes. And so IT is becoming very business process driven, not IT driven. So for instance, the whole from hiring to retiring, that whole business process of when you recruit an individual, I thought it was very interesting the discussion that the Secretary of State was having with you earlier, talking about the social media and all of that. That's for recruiting for employees, that social media is becoming critical. Being able to go from Monster and all of these, LinkedIn. And all of these and going straight from the recruitment, getting those people in, and then once they put their information in, feeding it to the payroll system. So we're taking out multiple manual entries of, okay, the to-be employee is putting their information into our system, and then we print it out. They go, they sit down, an interview for the position. You decide that you're going to hire them, and then they fill out their papers for retirement, for pick out their health insurance and all of this, and then they give it to their payroll administrator, and then they put all of this information by hand in, and then we have to do the PIN number for all of this. Needs to be looked at and looked from beginning to end. That's just one example of a very manual process that we're paying data entry for, to have people do redundant, duplicative processes that can be done leveraging with technology. Another thing that I found interesting by the Secretary's comment was he needed to have help putting into the manual processes that they have in their system. We're facing the same exact thing with manual entry. The more government grows, the more people you need to keep up with that administrative work. If you can leverage technology, you're reducing your future, your cost containing that cost. So that's why I think on in the packet that I sent out, I do have a cost savings on tab 2 that we can look at for the cost just of the manual, just the efficiencies that we will gain by becoming 50% efficient. And I think that's a very conservative estimate. World class is about 63% more efficient than we are now. So I'm saying, okay, we can go 50% more efficient and have room there. It just the cost benefit for 1 year is $3.6 million and that's just for manual transactions that I could identify the cost. The biannual cost of that is $7.2 million. That's just for manual transactions. There's other efficiencies that can be gained for that. For instance, electronic W-2s, then this office wouldn't have to expend however much it was, $66,000 to contract out for the paper production of those W-2s. I need to have the capability to do the IRS certification that you're going to accept your W-2 electronically and be able to do that. So, you know, the way the market has changed and industry has changed, it's time for us, kind of like, again, the flip phone analogy. I love that flip phone analogy. That's where I'm trying to leverage. I see the technology available out there. I see states such as the state of Colorado, the state of Maine is another example of HRS systems, the state of Delaware. And so this is a common business practice that every private entity has payroll. Every state has payroll. Every municipality has payroll. This is common IT.
Okay. What I'm just kind of, again, looking at – I'm just looking – any questions about that, members?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman and Madam Monitor, just on the timing of those anticipated savings, would you expect that you'd need 2 years of development and in the next biennium then we'd see a budget with those savings in it? Or what would you anticipate as far as realizing those savings?
In the RFP, we have identified a fit gap analysis where we can look at one of the things that our Hackett study brought about was the fact that we are very heavily manually based. And so we're paying professional people to do data entry rather than be analytical, providing value to the agency of reviewing, cost-containing your overtime, making sure that the payment is being correct because they're so manually focused. So part of the cost savings would be our error rate is 8% right now for our payroll. That would be reduced. So, you know, you reduce your time and efficiency. It allows them to do other things. Can we reallocate those positions where we have the clerical, where the clerical needs to be, and reallocate and do those positions and pay those people to do that work at a classification where they should be to do that work and then reallocate from professional to clerical? That's part of the fit gap analysis of one of the things that Director Fawcett wanted to look at in this was how we are organized doing the payroll in the state. So that's one of the goals because what we're doing right now is not efficient and we can do better. So, but if since we're talking about, so I've went over the cost kit savings for what I anticipate that we'll get just for the transactional, because to me the manually is the most that you could really grasp, understand, you know, that savings to leverage the technology. But in tab three, I have one of the things that I heard from my meetings from the legislature is examples of manual processes. What are some things that we're currently doing that would be fixed? So on tab three, that the manual time entry that we're doing, we had a forum a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, I guess. And so in one of the forums, we were talking about this project. And one of the agency staff members said, it takes me a week to enter time in for my agency. She spends a week, and she said, what would I do? Well, there's lots of things that I think that the agency could identify that she could do if she wasn't, you know, manually putting time in. So that was in one of our public meetings there, and I was just really floored that she spent a week putting time into the system, getting people ready to be paid. So we really, that's, and if you multiply that across every agency, what percentage are using Excel's timesheets and paper timesheets? I think it's 80.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. Committee members, we approximately right now only have about 28% of our state employees that are using any type of electronic timekeeping. The rest of it is all either Excel spreadsheets or manual paper. And they will sit at their desk and fill out a paper time card. And then the payroll specialists in their agencies sit and they manually enter their leave. Or if they're hourly employees, then they actually enter their actual hours of work. So only 28% of the state is on electronic timekeeping, and those are diverse timekeeping systems. We have agencies that go out and purchase their own time and attendance time. And so if you figure that one of our priorities for this project is a enterprise time and attendance system. If we can centralize and standardize our time and attendance, the money that is being spent in Department of Health, Family Services, corrections, those are using a Kronos system. We use the HR system, ESS. But if you combine those costs, you're going to find efficiencies. You're going to find standardizations. You're going to be able to share best practices across all your agencies.
And one of the things that I would like to add with that is that the State Auditor's Office is not a back office processing office. You know, it's not that we just process payroll and that's it. We're also charged with internal controls, making sure that we have transparency and accountability into those work processes, where we make sure that they have the proper approval levels. We make sure that they have proper certifications of their timesheets. There's not changes that individuals are making to timesheets after that they've been submitted on a piece of paper or something. So it also provides transparency and accountability so that we can properly do our jobs and safeguard the state's assets and make sure that there's not any duplications with that as well. Now, there are instances such as the Department of Health or Corrections. Corrections is very specialized with payroll. You have different time sheet, time schedules, and that, you know, you look at it and say, you know, perhaps Kronos is the best fit for them. They have industry-specific corrections payroll needs that there's actual correction modules for them that they're currently not utilizing that would make them even more efficient as well. But so, you know, an enterprise timekeeping system doesn't mean a one size fits all. What it means is, you know, that you, it's kind of like that 80% rule, I think, that Senator Enzi likes to talk about, where, you know, your efficiencies are going to be on getting the majority of them standardized, consistent, and uniform. But you're going to have those one-offs where the need for the agency is going to be something maybe different. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Am I hearing you right that, for example, the Department of Corrections is submitting their payroll data to you and you're re-entering it manually into the system?
We're not. They are.
They are.
that we interface, yes.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative, with Department of Corrections, we have an interface process. So their time is entered into the Kronos system, and then we have a process where we have an interface between our two systems. The difficulty there is that there is a manual intervention to be able to feed that over to us. They have to run the extract manually. They then put it loaded up into our relay box, and then we pull that down, and then it is automatically loaded up into our system. We do that for Department of Corrections. We also have a homegrown system at DEQ, so they have a homegrown little way of doing time, and we upload their time cards that way. But the majority of those, the 72% of the state agencies do manually enter their time into our system.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So how many different systems are there that track payroll that downloads into your system?
I don't have that right in front of me, but I can provide that to you. We have that in, I didn't happen to bring that with us, but I do have it. It's, I think, right now we have 18 inbound interfaces that come into us. And then we have to also exchange data out. And so we also have to share data like to workers' comp and unemployment. And but we also feed data back to DOT and some and back to Department of Corrections. And we also feed information back to Department of Health. So, but I can get you that specific information if you would like.
I don't know that it matters. That just doesn't seem very efficient to me to do that. And so what you're suggesting is it be one system that
we
controls
are
all the payroll. And would that be a policy decision or a technology issue or both?
It would be both. Part of the statutes for my office talk about making sure that there is no unnecessary duplication. And so I see a lot of unnecessary duplication. So that's what I'm trying to bring forward and say, again, we can do things better and bring that and make it uniform and consistent because it's you're able to cost contain better. You have less IT cost. You have less licensing cost, less management cost with that because the research that I've been doing in IT interfaces, just each interface can cost in management and maintaining about $10,000 to $30,000 a year for each interface, just in IT management. So our job, well, one of the things that we see that we can do is have those cloud-to-cloud interfaces that are automated and seamless rather than a very manual intervention where you have to move this file manually and put it over here. So we're you know, they have technology that does that, and we do that now with Kronos. So
one more follow-up question.
Yeah.
So how do you see the offset? If you had the system, how much would you save if the system was up and running over what we're doing today?
That's what the cost savings here for a biennium just for the manual transactions would be $7.2 million a year. Now, we don't have hard numbers in yet for the bids. We'll know for certain what those costs actually are. So, but that's what I am anticipating for cost savings. That isn't, go ahead.
No, go ahead. We're listening to you. I just let you know that from the queue. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Okay. Go ahead. So the cost benefits that I'm seeing is an actual, you have one or two things. For instance, I'm not advocating that we eliminate positions, but I'm saying that they can be used, better used in a better manner. Or, you know, perhaps you have, you reorganize. One of the things that we're trying to do is we look at the process. Perhaps you have one HR person for, the boards and commissions, like pods, a public accounting firm or a law firm, you have your staff person have in charge of multiple clients. So perhaps you have your HR people in charge of, you know, a couple of agencies, smaller agencies, but maybe the larger agency would need one or two. So, but this is part of the project in looking at how we're doing human capital management in the state. But this project is much bigger than just payroll, employee self-service. This goes to succession planning software, making sure that they have those right tools to do their job, and what other modules that we're looking at.
There's nine components to the bid, and we have listed those in your executive summary. One of the things that the state is, and we've worked very closely with Director Fawcett on this, the state is expecting at this particular point anywhere from 25 to 30% retirement rate in the next 5 years. The difficulties that the state has right now is, and this is one of the things that was brought up in the Hackett study, is when we have a position that comes open, it takes us on an average of 108 days to fill a position. And that is very costly to the state. We have to have other staff members absorb extra duties. We are having difficulties in building succession and training. So part of this is to have a training module where we can actually track the certifications of employees, their training. We can then build a talent pool. So as the Department of A&I HRD knows that a position, a high-level position, is coming available, they will have the tools to go and look at, see what different talents we have and where we may fill that gap with additional training so that we can start building a mentoring program where we can build talent pools. So if we know that we are going to have a shortage in nursing, for example, they can then identify where maybe we can increase our nursing skills and what kind of skills and training they may need. Same thing for corrections. Corrections right now has a very high level of unemployment or open vacancies. So what kind of training do they have? How can they build that succession? What can they do to keep the employees to stay with the state? So succession planning is number two, and the training manual or module is number three on our priority list.
Right. We ranked the modules by priority. And in the event that the funding was not available for the whole project to get those modules that are really critical, that really are needed by both agencies. And so that's why we rank them in a priority. Time and attendance, I know, is our number one priority. Succession planning was ANI's second priority. And and talent management was their next priority for those three. So, and all, there's a lot of really Excel-based, manual things that are happening, in those areas, or outsourcing in those areas as well for ANI shops. So this is, something I consider this a business transformation for the state of Wyoming. We're gonna be, just as, again, you heard the Secretary of State talking about how they're trying to move forward with and leverage that technology. That's what we're attempting to do as well. He mentioned social media. One of the things, again, the recruiting with social media, that it's a really big trend right now. And then just internal social tools internally, kind of like the Google things between employees and supervisors, that type of technology we don't have at this point embedded within the talent management part. That's critical. I kind of, when I talk about it, it's kind of like, here's the data, and then here are the modules that sit on the data. So it can be linked and shared between the two agencies and used with those modules, like the learning management, keeping up with that, and just if right now you don't know if you have a critical position in an agency and you're having a hard time recruiting for that, we can tell you that Joe Smith has a engineering degree, but we couldn't tell you the type of skills that he has to be able to identify another employee to maybe recruit to get over to that other agency that's needed. We can't see that top-down global look, which is needed now, especially with analytics, with predictive analytics that are available now to be able to, you know, give the legislature information. It'll be interesting. I look forward to your discussion with the director of ANI on how this is important to his office as well, not only to my office, but to his duties as well. You know, so I look forward to that discussion with him for you. But some of the things on the last tab, if I can just go over, number 7, the human resource IT trends and best practices. Integration is like one of the key words that's happening right now with IT, and actually a Deloitte Tech Trend for Public Sectors white paper came out and called the CIO the new Chief Integration Officer, which I thought was very interesting. Integration is key to future. Not only that, linking your HR data is critical for personnel, for certain deductions, policy processes, and integration with the finance for general ledger, tax and accounting, and regulation compliance is also vital. So that information has to be really linked for efficiency to your general ledger and your compliance pieces. So there's just a lot of really key things that we're hoping to leverage. Again, the tablets, what they were talking about earlier with the being able to have mobile, you know, being able to do your timesheet on your phone when you're out in the field for game and fish, being able to be on a fire, and be in the middle of the field and know your GPS coordinates for your federal grant. You know, because you have to submit that. That's the type of leap that we're trying to help and provide. Now, you did bring up another issue that you brought up about this not being recommended by the OCIO, and I'm not quite, I think I see that as two separate discussions. I want this project to stand on its own two feet. I want this project to have a positive outcome, but I would like to in the future have a separate discussion either with the management council or either with the technology committee as well on my viewpoint of where I think that our office could have been served better and provided additional assistance and provided good information and quality service. And, I mean, I don't think that this is the appropriate committee for us to have that discussion, but I'm ready to have it if you're ready. So.
We're not ready.
Okay.
I guess we'll be interested to see the
I think we'll be interested to see these bid openings, but, yeah, there's a lot to this, and we'll visit with ANI a little bit too on this issue. But, it's a massive amount of money, and yeah, these are the savings, but we're not gonna reduce our workforce any, and so there are no savings.
Right, well.
Really, there are no savings to us on this end.
On the workforce.
And that's where all the money is.
Right,
state
that's government.
Where. That's 80% of it.
Right. And right.
So it's tough for us
you
to
can
make
realign.
That leap. Let me just kind of finish. So I think it's tough. It's tough for us to take that leap right now. But we're going to, you know, we'll keep working on it, consideration of the whole thing, Madam Auditor, and we appreciate you bringing it to us. Are there any other questions then about Madam Auditor's budget?
Just one question.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. what are the ongoing costs if we were to do this project? I don't think you've discussed what the cost is of maintaining such a system. Mm-hmm.
That is on tab 4. Tab 4, page 7. You can see the total 5 years project cost. Year one and year two is the actual implementation, and that's the $15 million that we're projecting. Year three, four, and five is ordinary business costs, and we're hoping to put that in our budget, our standard budget that we have now, and not ask for any additional funds. So you'll see a total of $31 million there, but the year one and year two are the cost of implementing the new software, and year three, four, and five are basically the same as what we're doing right now.
So where would that year three, four, and five come out of your budget? What?
Out of my 900 series that I'm authorized, that I have in my standard budget right now, we're paying a total of $9.9 million a biennium for finance and payroll services software right now. A portion of that $9 million would be attributed to the payroll. So it would be absorbed by the new software would be, we'd shift it from either the current vendor to a new vendor, or either, you know, how the bids come in, what the committee selects, you know. Does that make sense?
And, Mr. Co-Chair, go ahead and finish up if you have some.
No, I was wondering. It's about $5 million a year, basically.
Right, but, which is what it is now.
Does every state do it like us, where you've got HR and then somebody else does the payroll, another agency?
Are you talking about vendors or?
No, other states.
There's a number of different models. For instance, Tennessee and Florida.
I guess, are there more efficient models than what we're doing? Two different agencies.
Each state is different. I mean, you know this from your own legislative experience, and they all have, but, there are challenges to how we do it. For instance, I can have a furniture salesman in charge of the bookkeeping in one agency and have a CPA in the next agency. So the decentralization like that is challenging. But Rhonda, who's the CAFR manager, deals with that really, really well.
How about, like, so you don't do the University of Wyoming and community colleges?
Right.
So in your estimation, are some of those, they're obviously smaller numbers, you know, but are they more efficient? Do they have different, smaller systems? I mean,
The University of Wyoming system would be a much more complex system, as I think Representative Connolly would know. I mean, the tenured employees, the different contracts that you have, you're paid on a different pay schedule, you have tuition modules, you have financial aid modules. So it's a very industry-specific complex, because we did look at that. Senator Bebout asked me that same exact question. And yes, we could do that, but it'd be like an entire new implementation anyway, but to be able to do it, that moving them from PeopleSoft over to whatever it is that they decide would be for their finance system.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious. I know that the workforce aspect of this is not the major focus, but out of curiosity, when you look at some of the duplicate, you know, the risks, the spaghetti interfacing and duplication of work, increased costs, and then you go down here and look at workforce learning and development process, strategic workforce planning, how much of this is already done by our workforce services, and how much would it be duplicated what they do, and is any of this in concert with anything they're doing?
Well, in some respects, some of this is not even being done today. Okay, simply because of the fact that most of our people that are in the agencies are so concentrated in entering payroll or benefits administration transactions that they don't have the opportunity to do some of those other tasks that you just mentioned. So those, there's actually a void in the state for some of that. Yes, we have duplication of effort and payroll entry. That's the reason we feel that an enterprise time and attendance is the way to go, because your employee is the one that knows their time. They know what grants they've worked on, and have them enter that. And then the supervisor compare that to their schedule of work, their assignments, and it automatically workflows. And then the payroll specialist is certifying and validating that the time and the attendance and the leave and such is actually accurate, instead of sitting there and manually entering. We have an 8% error rate simply because we have manual, but we haven't even talked about the overpayment that is caused because of that 8% error rate. When it is manually entered, we have discovered over the course of time that we have double paid people. People have forgot to go in. For example, when an employee goes on leave for whatever reason and they're out without pay, they need to manually go in and shut that pay off. The system will automatically generate their pay the way it is set up if you're a salaried employee. But we have had the case where employees are out intermittently and they didn't shut that off, and we've actually had, and then they've gone in and entered time and we've actually overpaid them, and that becomes very costly, and we haven't even talked about that overpayment rate, and that's part of the 8% error rate and the cost of recovering that overpayment. And if the employee has terminated, then we have a collection problem. So this is a downhill snowball effect that happens with manual entry. So when you have the employee become the accountable person for entering their time and their attendance, then you will have them certifying, and then you validate that through a scheduling process. The other piece that we are having a problem with is there is no way right now that we can identify the absentee rate in the state of Wyoming. So in the system that we're talking about, if you want to look at an employee that may be chronically gone, but you don't really have a way of identifying what is their scheduled timeout, what is their absenteeism for unscheduled leave, we don't have a system right now to date that can address those needs. And that's the analytical piece that we need to drive to identify those different problem areas and then be able to find workable solutions to address if we have a chronic leave absence problem. So those are the types of things that a enterprise time and attendance, it's not just putting in your time. Time is the beginning of payroll. And that is the reason why today it is a part of the payroll system. And that's why we have manual entry. But we also have a huge amount of other things that need to be tracked. We need to know when the employees are working on individual grants, and so that they can actually attribute that and draw that money back down from the federal government. Today, a lot of that is being tracked manually in spreadsheets. So those are some of the benefits that we're going to find.
Okay, members, any questions? Okay, I think we're... Is there anything else then on your budget? Anything else? I think it's pretty straightforward. Okay, members. Well, we thank you, Madam Auditor. And if we have further questions, we'll get back here. We'll discuss this with A&I, I'm sure, a little bit tomorrow, actually, too, I think. Is A&I tomorrow?
Either that or Wednesday.
They are tomorrow.
Well, very good. So, well, I'm glad. Thank you so
much. We're going to have a lot. We're going to talk about this a lot more.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too.
Okay, so I think we're adjourned then till 8 o'clock, 8 a.m.